and a very good Monday morning to you, or a different time if you are listening to an encore of this show, because it's going to be so stimulating, it's worth listening to over and over again. Adam Lepp here with a fine or a mid-morning coffee break with Adam and the professor, Dr. Ron Feynman, after a very short sabbatical. And how are you today, my friend?
I'm doing fine. I'm doing very well. And I want to speak up now, you know, before we go any further, mention that tomorrow, August 11th, will be the 12-year anniversary of my Progressive Professor blog, and it will have 6,800 entries I will have done by tomorrow, August 11th, 12 years.
Well, that's quite excellent. Let's hope for 12 more and 12 more
yes.
After that. You'll be like 100 years old after two more 12-year anniversaries, won't you?
Well, not in 12 years, no.
Anyway, we last week, Ron, I'm sure you'd be pleased to hear that I aired a repeat of our little debate with our favorite conservative commentator, Mike Essen, which aired about 3 years ago. So that was kind of fun when we replayed that program. All the programs are available on our website at WWGH1071.com. It's housed on our private web server. We also have a private email server, but unfortunately Hillary is not running, but she probably would enjoy my private IT equipment, but that's okay. You know, election time is rapidly approaching. We do want to share a secret. We are taping this program during the weekend previous to the 10th, and more than likely, Ron, by the time this airs, I think that Sniffy Joe may have made his decision about the vice president. If not, he'll be doing so very soon. There was some news about Susan Rice, which seems to have lowered her chances of being named the running mate. And it seems like Gretchen Whitmer, I'll just talk about her a little bit later, but you can probably hear my blood boil as I say the name. But anyway, Gretchen Whitmer, although she is of the white persuasion, which was thought to be a detriment to Joe's pick, but not necessarily. She is of the female persuasion.
Well, I think she's a lot more attractive than my mom. I don't give her whatever else you might say. She's much more attractive, in my opinion. But, you know, the governor of Michigan.
I would say what's outside of her head is much more attractive than what's inside of her head. Let's put it that way. But I do judge people not only on their looks, but their personality and intelligence and likability. Ron and I certainly agree that Dr. Jill Biden is beautiful outside and inside. In fact, I think she should be running for president instead. Maya Hurra is doing her professoring while she was second lady during the Obama administration. Get the feeling she may still be professoring if Biden were to win. You know, she's and rather easy on the eyes, too. So she's someone I think.
Ideal ticket is Joe Biden for president, and I guess Michelle Obama for vice president. How's that?
Well, that would be kind of interesting. Yeah, I'd ask you, Ron. Is it possible, like, to nominate your spouse as the VP? And I guess you really can't. But I think Joe Biden could be an interesting VP, but I guess that's not going to happen. You know, for all intents and purposes, Hillary was VP under her husband's administration. You know, I'm not really a fan of Al Gore. He claimed he invented the internet. His wife's main campaign.
He actually never said that. That's a mistake. That's not true. That's a myth, by the way. You never said that.
And his wife, Tipper, her main thing is record labels and people saying the F word in rock and roll lyrics, which I think, although I sometimes find song lyrics offensive, I think we got bigger problems to worry about. So not really a fan of him or his wife. So, you know, I think we would agree, Ron. Hillary was more of a VP during the Clinton administration than Gore was, and I have no problem with that. You know,
because Al Gore was very intimately involved, more than anybody except Mondale before Biden. He actually was very intimately involved with conservation policy, environmental. He made Clinton an environmentalist. He actually was very engaged, unlike other vice presidents, except for Mondale before him and Joe Biden after him.
But you would agree, Hillary was... She certainly had an effect in the administration. I mean, maybe saying she was essentially the VP may be a stretch, but you know what I mean. She was almost
She harmed him with the health care plan. It didn't go anywhere, so I think I weakened her, even if she had an impact at the beginning.
Well, she's a bit divisive, and, you know, we have mixed opinions on her, but I don't think her goals of running for president are going to be resumed, so she's just a footnote in history at this point, but an interesting footnote nonetheless. Mm-hmm. But as I said, it's likely by the time this airs or shortly thereafter that Joe Biden will have picked his VP. And you had thought Susan Rice was in the running, and there was some upsetting news about her recently, so she seems to have dropped a bit. I've always said Gretchen Whitmer was in the running, and I think her chances may have increased as she apparently paid a little visit to Joe's residence.
Yeah, I was surprised by that. I didn't expect that to happen. By the way, I'm just curious because I keep up. What is it Susan Rice did? I think you're confusing her with Karen Bass, who had two negatives against her.
Yeah, it was something with a hole in her resume for a couple of years. She did something with some foreign countries. And
you're right, yeah.
I don't really know what she did, but...
True, yeah.
It does spice things up, you know, spicy rice, which I like eating anyway, but this is the human kind of spicy rice, so we shall see.
Congresswoman Karen Bass really was harmed by the fact that she seemed to endorse Scientology in 2010 and also seemed a little too much upset about Fidel Castro's demise in 2016, so I think she is probably gone, and if she is picked, that's going to be a real problem for Joe Biden with those two issues of Cuba and Scientology. I think that she's done, even though she had a little bit of a promotion about 2 weeks ago, but I think she's done now.
I think the safe pick, though, from a prediction standpoint, remains Harris, and I've thought she would be the candidate for quite a while.
I think she, since she ran for president already, she's the most presidential in the sense she's been on the campaign trail. Rice has never campaigned for anything. And Bass is a House member. I don't think House members should be vice president. I think that was a mistake with Josie and Ferraro with Mondale. You don't pick a congressperson. You pick a senator or a governor or a cabinet member, one of those three. I just think this is too weak a position. And you certainly don't pick someone who, you know, who ran and may have been involved in a situation where the person who won was crooked. Meaning, of course, Stacey Abrams, that she was denied the governorship, but she didn't win it. So no matter how it happened, she should not be even considered. And yet, theoretically, she could be picked, but I don't think that would be a good choice either.
Do you think that Whitmer now is a serious candidate, or is that more just for show?
I don't know. I'm a little surprised. Not because I don't think he doesn't like her, but I thought he was committed to a person of color. And I think he might have troubles out Joe Biden if he picks either her or Warren, meaning a white woman, because he sort of like seemed to, he didn't say it exactly, but he kept on talking about people of color, and I think that could cause some African Americans to maybe not vote for him and stay home. So I really think, you know, Harris is the safe choice now, and the one that has, you know, she has faults, as you, of course, would point out, but I think she's more known than anybody else that's in the race now.
And I guess one issue is they call her the female Barack Obama, and yeah. Biden was obviously VP under Obama. Would even people that like Obama, I mean, you want something different, even if you love the candidate. That was, I think, the problem with FDR. He was just president too long, but we've kind of moved on from that idea, and I think we agree. Two terms, that's plenty. Do we really want, even if you, and I know you love Obama, you know, but even people like yourself, Ron, who are big Obama fans, do you want a repeat for maybe 8 years of Obama? And I think that's what you'd be getting with Harris and Biden. Is that going to be an obstacle?
But what about your thought that if Michelle Obama was to agree to run with Biden, then you'd have a different Obama, theoretically, for 8 years?
Yes, I agree. It's not a perfect argument. But I think Michelle, like Hillary, is a bit different from her husband. I see Joe Biden and Kamala Harris pretty similar to Obama. And even though she's his wife, she has that, like Hillary, she has that assessment of being strong-willed. You know, we joke about her and her muscular arms and telling Barack he had to quit smoking if he became president, that he promised the girls a dog if he got elected. And she has that image of being a strong-willed, and I think that would help her show. Yes, she's dedicated, she learns, and she loves her husband, but she is still different. She is her own person. So I guess, ironically, you know, though you make a very good point, I think she would be a little different in terms of politics and image if she were to be VP or end up ascending as to president. But in all those cases, we're seeing a lot of the Obama administration, and maybe people just want something a little bit different. That was certainly
hard to say, because after Trump and so many people are unhappy, maybe they want to go back to an Obama person, me, the Michelle, or maybe someone who's called the female Barack Obama, is what I'm saying. Maybe they do want that. It's hard to know, because we don't even know if the election is going to be conducted fairly now, with the post office being intervened to try to make it harder for people to mail ballots. So I don't know. It's so hard to know what's going to happen.
It's, again, a tough call in this, you know, 2020. The whole year is the Twilight Zone, but it's going to get Twilight Zone for sure. There's no question. This year, it is just unique. I don't know how else to say it. It's crazy, with a capital C. You are listening to
still 4.5 months to go. That's the problem. It's not almost over.
That's what I'm saying. It's getting crazier. You're listening to a finer mid-morning coffee break with Adam and the professor. Adam Lepp here with Dr. Ron Feinman discussing the election. We try to keep this to be a no-mask zone and only talking about COVID issues indirectly. I think there's enough to talk about. We can avoid those kinds of topics. Again, if you, as a listener, would like to know my viewpoint on those things, I suggest you read my Facebook. You're welcome to friend me. Just look up Adam the Computer Guy. I accept pretty much any friend request if I believe you're a real person. There are a few fakes out there, but if you're a real person, you don't have to agree with me. I have Facebook friends, Ron, who are very to the left, who call themselves socialists. One guy even said he's a member of the American Communist Party. That's cool. I have friends, you know, we talked about Mike Essen and others, who are very conservative. And you know me, I'm eclectic, so I have a little bit of agreement with almost all of them, which kind of makes things fun. So don't worry about friending me or talking to me, emailing me. If your opinions don't coincide with mine, that's cool. I respect and acknowledge and appreciate and encourage all opinions. And one thing I know we're on the same side of on is free speech. That's one of the things we treasure as Americans. And people, if they agreed on everything, the world would be a very boring place. And, you know, 2020, definitely isn't boring. But again, if you'd like to see my viewpoints on things we try to talk about during this show, like masks and COVID and all that stuff, well, just see my Facebook, and that should pretty much clarify it. And again, you're welcome to message me, friend me, send me hate mail, make an effigy of me and throw a rotten egg at it, whatever you choose to do. Ron is the author of a blog called The Progressive Professor, theprogressiveprofessor.com, an educated view from the left. Again, Ron, I would say is a moderate or a little less than moderate liberal or democratic person. Again, he and I agree on some things, don't agree on others. And I think 2/3 of issues, Ron, we just partially agree. We try to make a happy medium. That's what intelligent people do. So we do encourage, again, folks, read the blog. Feel free to comment, share it, swear at it, love it, whatever you
And also look at History News Network under blogs from Ronald L. Feinman. I published my 149th article on there since January 2016.
Now, just before we tape this show, Ron, Donald Trump signed some executive orders. I'm sure you saw that. It includes a stimulus package. Do you have any thoughts on that?
It probably will not be able to be accomplished because the Congress has to appropriate money. And I think it's being sued in court, and I think it's going to eventually have to be the Congress is going to have to come to an agreement that he can't just do it on his own by executive order. And is also lowering the amount to $400 as if the people getting $600 are so well off. But I think that's going to be controversial because people already are desperate. They're going to be homeless by the millions and starving, and it's just not enough. And he needs to push his Republican Senate, and so does McConnell, to get those 20 or so that refuse to do anything about it. And I am certain, without being certain, but I am certain in my own mind, that Rand Paul, Ted Cruz, and also Tom Cotton are three of those intransigents. I'm certain they're so outrageously bad. And I put them on an article that I was talking about, you know, comparing the worst senators in the Republican Party, and I think they're three of the absolute worst, and they don't give a crap about anybody.
But don't you think it was a good compromise? Our mutual friend, who was very to the left, Gwen Holden Berry, and you're on her talk show often, she talked about that on Facebook, and I replied, it's a compromise. And I think you'd agree, Ron, whether or not you agree that it was a good compromise, if it will pass, whatever, that's probably the biggest job in terms of difficult decisions a president or any politician has to make is compromise, because no one's going to agree on everything. And I think in this, and I think you would agree, Ron.
The initial package of the Democrats was $3 trillion. The Republicans won, and they talked about coming to the middle, and the Republicans said, no, we're not going to budge beyond the $1 trillion. So they're not coming to the middle between 1 and 3, and he's just giving up on that, and he's not caring about the issue of state and local governments, all the nurses and teachers and social workers and firefighters who are going to be laid off. They're not going to give any aid to the states at all on this, and the $600 benefit is going to be $400, and you know that's not going to be adequate. So it should at least go up higher than $1 trillion. But he basically has given up, and he's just blaming the Democrats rather than his own intransigent Republicans, where even Mitch McConnell can't get them to bend.
I think we can agree to disagree on that one. Nurses, Ron, that's pretty much, I would say, more than pretty much, definitely a recession-proof job with close to zero unemployment, and we talk about a health crisis.
But they have to be paid. If they're public employees, they have to have money to pay them. Same with teachers and firefighters and police officers. You know, all these places are going to have a lot of people, but they don't come up with an answer.
Well, it's many of the Democrats. I know not you, Ron, but many of the Democrats want to fire police officers, not have police officers, have community boards of some kind.
I
know you don't agree with that. But I don't see the police officers and people in healthcare. I think this actually is a good time for them. Anytime. They're always needed. They're always, and I agree, they are overworked and underpaid. But teachers and restaurant workers.
Firefighters. Yeah.
But we can also say, should they close the country down to begin with? And you and I don't agree on that one. And we've said this is a no mask, no COVID zone. So we'll just pose that question and move on instead of debating it. But again, I think my regular listeners and friends know how I feel. And again, it's America. You're free to have your own opinion and move on. As my mama said, opinions are like rear ends. Well, she didn't say rear ends, but you know what I mean. Everybody has one, including myself. But we're talking with Dr. Ron Fineman on a finer mid-morning coffee break with Adam and the professor. Let's, again, I don't want to talk about the COVID situation, but this is more on an indirect level because I think the actual topic isn't directly COVID. It just relates to COVID, but isn't really the controversy like what I talked about a minute ago. Our governor, Ron, Mike DeWine, was going to meet with President Donald J. Trump in Cleveland a few days ago. And as part of protocol, he had to take a rapid corona test. And when he took the first test, he was positive. And, of course, that was blasted all over social media half a second after it came out, including by myself.
I think he didn't want to meet Trump. That's what I think. I'm joking about that. I think he didn't really want to be bothered seeing him, so he came up with that excuse.
Right, he took a different test, as did his wife and people that are close to him, and it was negative. Then he took a second test, and it was negative again. Of course, the question is, how do we know how accurate tests are? I mean, I've been saying this all along. I mean, 150,000 deaths, how many are really from COVID? I personally think if a third of them are, I'd be surprised. Now we're getting into the number of deaths that are from the flu anyway, not to mention deaths from car accidents and other things that are unfortunate but do happen on, again, a regular basis, and that's, of course, formed a lot of
my opinion.
What
about all these kids at that camp in Georgia who tested positive? And what about what's going on in some of the schools already that have opened up in different states?
I see a lot of doctors.
How can you open up the schools and endanger the teachers and also the kids go home and endanger the parents and grandparents?
I see a lot of doctors, Ron, and DeWine himself just making excuses why it was positive and negative. You know, if they can't test accurately and they claim to know so much about this, well, maybe they really don't, which I think is typical of these types of diseases. Again, the cold is a type of coronavirus.
Oh, no one.
And they're still trying to figure that one out. You know, we joke, well, we can give a quadruple bypass, we can cure some cancers, but we still can't cure the common cold. But that's kind of how medicine is sometimes. And, you know, Ron, IT work is a lot like that. Sometimes a person presents you with a simple problem, but I can't figure it out because you don't know what happened. Yet someone has some really weird problem, I come in and fix it in half an hour and look like a genius. But, you know, medicine is a lot like that, as are a lot of things with life. Sometimes these things that seem simple, they're still puzzled over, yet things that seem so complicated. Again, quintuple bypass, brain surgery, cancer. For some reason, those seem to be curable, or at least can be helped, can be stopped or slowed down Whereas that
well,
was
I got to tell you, the quadruple bypass, I had it 16 years ago, and I'm still here on your show, so it worked.
Yeah, but yeah, I think you'd agree. That's kind of how things are in medicine and IT. And,
well, it's 2004, not now,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, many of the things we see in the world. I'm not saying that a heart operation is routine, but it is something that is well established and in the hands of a competent cardiologist. There's a pretty good chance you will not only survive, but you'll survive for a long time and quite possibly be in better health than you were before the operation. Ron, again, being a living proof of that. Whereas, again, the common cold and other things that are routine, but granted not very serious, they're still trying to figure out. And that's kind of how medicine is. And I think this is a case in point. So we ask, you know, yeah, people have joked, Ron, and I also tend to see that there's, I think you'd agree, there's more going on here than we're being told. We'll never really know. Was this a fake test? Did they find a way to make it positive just so that DeWine wouldn't have to meet Donald? I mean, who knows?
Maybe he didn't want to, because I don't think the two men are fans of each other because of what DeWine
did
earlier.
It still begs the question, are there really 150,000 corona deaths? Are there really 4 million people with positive tests? Well, I don't believe that for 1 minute. We take a look at how serious it is, and again, different age groups, different tests, the time span between possible exposure and the testing, how many people may have been exposed. Well, I, again, just note this as the election year flu. And I said, we're not going to really talk about coronas, and I'm kind of doing that and breaking my rule. But
you know, I wanted to mention, I just looked at the headlines, 5 million cases as of today now.
Right.
It says in the New York Times just today. So, you know, so which is not Monday.
But
it's
you would agree, Ron, that the fact that, you know, even if, again, this is not something you want to joke about. Yeah, even in my case, you're not, you don't go ahead and just make it a positive test. You scare the whole world. And DeWine, I think, also scaring anybody who's been close to him just because you don't want to meet the president. It's also, even if you don't like Donald, it's also disrespectful.
I'm joking about that. Making it up.
Right. And then suddenly you take two tests.
Media would say that. That's why I'm saying it.
Yeah, so you would agree, Ron. We maybe not to the same scope that I do, but there's more to this story. And when you see this, even though it's a public official, you see this rapid test, and people are saying, "Well, it's just not accurate." Why do you give the test if it's not accurate? How many false positives have there been? How is that inflating the numbers? Then he takes the test that is negative. Something else is going on.
It's a problem. Yeah.
And, you know, that's one thing where I guess Ron and I do agree. It's just the ultimate seriousness and how we're going to take care of it. We agree partially, but I think in most things we probably don't. But bottom line is, Ron, as you and I talked about when I told you about this test and DeWine coming as positive, it is an eye-opener. And it causes everybody to take a step back and kind of wonder what exactly is going on here. How much of politics is coming into play with this situation? And, you know, I guess we'll never really know because they never really tell us everything. But we do.
Well, the fact that it's a Republican governor and a Republican president, I don't think there's politics in it. It's not like a Democrat trying to prove somebody wrong. It's the same party as far as the people involved.
But we would agree it's a tangled web that we weave. And I guess people talking about things on social media, that seems to be the end result. And I guess dialogue, it's always a good thing. Again, it's part of free speech, something which we all treasure as Americans. Adam Lepp here talking to Dr. Ron Fineman, trying to keep this to be a non-COVID zone. We've not discussed masks at all, but we've talked about COVID. I think on a secondary level, not really directly, but the Mike DeWine story, the one positive test, two negative tests, his wife and all staffers are negative. I think that is something which we need to touch on, and we've done that. And regardless of how you, the listener, feel, it does complicate things and maybe skew a few opinions. And I guess we'll find out what else may come about.
Yeah, I wanted to mention the number of cases in Ohio has started to rise again, I read.
Yeah, well, again, it depends upon which test they're taking, how many tests they're taking, and I guess if they don't want to meet a certain politician.
Indiana, Wisconsin, it's also rising. It's the Midwest is starting to get it, and also rural areas are getting it. And it keeps on moving around from the Northeast to the South and West, and now to the Midwest and rural areas. It's really weird, the whole thing.
On August 5th, Ron, in your blog, theprogressiveprofessor.com, the five words which will sink Donald Trump in November, it is what it is regarding coronavirus pandemic deaths. Again, we're really just talking about corona on a secondary level. It's more a Trump and what comes out of his mouth. You feel that this really was something that's going to be very detrimental to him? I don't think it's that big of a deal, but you think it is?
I think
something...
it is, because it shows he has no empathy, no compassion. He talks about death. Oh, it is what it is. That's not the kind of thing a president... No president's ever acted that way. It would be like in World War II if FDR had said about combat deaths, oh, well, it is what it is. You don't do that when it comes to death. You just don't. And it shows his lack of empathy and compassion, which he lacks generally, and we know that. But this is proof of it. That's going to keep on being in ads for the next 3 months. You can be sure of that.
So you think that Joe Biden and his VP to be announced and his team will be taking the ball and running with it and using that as a way to bury Donald Trump's campaign?
Well, one of the things, not the only one. As I pointed out on August 8th, which is Saturday, I pointed out that, I've seen it elsewhere, that he needs to, and the Democrats need to emphasize Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and the Affordable Care Act, with all the faults they all have. These things were done by Democrats and the Republican Congress. If they get in with both houses and Trump, they're out to wipe and to cut down on all these, wipe out all the coverage under Affordable Care without a replacement, and they want to cut funding on Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. So senior citizens and working class people need to understand that, and that's really an important point that he and his running mate need to emphasize, and Democrats running in the House and Senate need to emphasize. I think that's more important than almost anything else, because this is everyday life that what people expect is part of government, Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, and some form of health care like the Affordable Care Act. Maybe not that one, but some kind, not just wipe it out.
On the 3rd of August, Ron, in your blog, you write, a bloodbath coming among House Republicans after the election. Every indication is that the Republican Party is on the way to a massive defeat in Congress to match 64 and 74. Those who will lead the attack include Louis Gohmert of Texas, one of our least favorite people, Jim Jordan of Ohio.
Oh, I wrote about the worst people, and these are three of them. Jim Jordan, Louis Gohmert, Matt Gaetz of Florida. Yes, and also Devin Nunes. They're part of my 10 worst Republican House members I wrote about a few days earlier, or a week earlier.
So it's like the Dirty Dozen or the Dirty Ten in this
In
this case.
And they're going to go after Kevin McCarthy, the Republican leader, and Minority Whip Steve Scalise, and also Liz Cheney, you know, the daughter of Dick Cheney. They're the top three Republican leaders. And in comparison, they're mainstream, although they're not. But the others are, they're Tea Party people, the other people. So, you know, if that happens, they're going to try to destroy and get all those people out and put people like themselves in.
So you're seeing a bloodbath.
In quotes, of course.
Yeah. A lot of competition. And a lot of dirty politicking, as I said. If you think it's crazy now, boys and girls, you ain't seen nothing yet. And that's
well. The thing is, there is even a chance, although unlikely, that some of these so-called leaders could lose their seats. But there's no way that Jim Jordan in your district is going to lose. I'm clear of that. And Gohmert, and these people, they're so far right, they are locked into a Republican district they can never lose. So the more extreme ones are more likely to survive than the so-called less extreme ones.
Well, while we're bashing Republicans, or at least you are, but that's
Jim
kind
Jordan.
Of the fun of talk. It's we can do some bashing. If you get into public office, expect to be bashed. Expect to be complimented. That's how it is in politics. On July 30th, Ron, you write the 10 worst Republican House members in the 116th Congress. And it seems that there are two of them from the state where you hang your hat. Matt Gaetz.
Oh, yes.
Or maybe it's Gaetz or whatever his name is, of Florida. And Ted Yoho. That's a good name.
But he's leaving. Yoho is leaving.
Of Florida.
Yeah, he's leaving. He's one of the three that will not be coming back. He's retiring. But, oh, I tell you, they're just unbelievable. And Matt Gaetz is a young squirt. He's a much younger guy, and he's a real arrogant guy, but he's very close to Trump, yes.
And not surprising, the aforementioned former wrestling coach Jim Jordan of Ohio, who represents many of our listeners here in the Marion area. We also have Steve King, Councilman-at-Large Greg Gianforte of Montana.
He's running for governor now, so he won't be in the House. He probably will be the governor, though. Oh, my God.
Congressman Joe Wilson of South Carolina, Congresswoman Virginia Fox of North Carolina. Don't know much about Virginia Fox. What's wrong with her? She's also the only female on the list, by the way.
Well, she's there were others that left the Congress, like Michelle Bachmann. She's a Michelle Bachmann type person, a real, I think, moronic, crazy lunatic type. But she keeps on getting reelected. Michelle Bachmann left, of course, a few terms back.
But so Virginia Fox, I don't know much about her. And you said Greg Gianforte of Montana, he wants to be governor.
Well, he's not running for the House, so he'll be gone, and so will Yoho be gone. And also King got defeated in the primary. He's really a lunatic, but he got defeated in Iowa, finally. So those three will not be there, but the others probably will. But look at Louie Gohmert, where he ended up having positive COVID-19, and he told his staff to stay in the office and endangered them and three interns. And, you know, he's a wacko. He's been a wacko for years, but in that district in Texas, he keeps on getting elected.
So Steve
King.
He's
elected judge. Yeah. First, he was a judge. Can you believe this? A person was a judge in Texas, now is in the House for many years. What kind of people are being elected judge, you know?
Steve King of Iowa has been dethroned, or will be dethroned. He was supposed to giggle at that one. It really wasn't that funny, though. So.
Well, also, he was stripped of his committee memberships by Republican leader McCarthy because of things he had said, so he had no committees this year. So he was on his way out anyway, but he was trying to keep his seat, but he actually lost to the primary.
And we had touched on this earlier, but you wrote back in late July, and this is very surprising on my end, too. Donald Trump has made two Supreme Court appointments, and both were conservative, I mean, not surprisingly.
Gotten.
Yeah, let's go ahead. We have Neil Gorsuch and, of course, Mr. Brett Kavanaugh. You write back in late July, Neil Gorsuch, a surprise on the Supreme Court. Seems like he's voted more to the left, or at least in the middle, on some issues.
He's been surprising on a case involving Oklahoma and Native Americans. Eastern Oklahoma is therefore Native American territory by the majority of the court. That's what they decided. He joined the four liberals. I couldn't believe that he did that.
But I think with Gorsuch, he is a scholar. And just knows that he has to follow the law regardless of what his political leanings are. And that's the way a judge should be, Ron. I don't see the political parties in a judge. They're supposed to interpret the Constitution and kind of be that tiebreaker if you're not really sure about something. So hats off to Gorsuch. You know, what he feels.
Well, in a way, he's a little like Scalia was, because Scalia was in the majority in 1989 on a court case saying flag burning is constitutional. Freedom of speech. I was stunned by that. You know, it was he and liberals and a few moderates of the group then, 6-3, that, you know, that burning a flag is constitutional.
Yeah, that's his job is to interpret the Constitution.
Strict interpretation of the Constitution. You know?
Yeah, and again, it's the free speech, freedom of expression. No, we all think that burning the flag is a very mean thing to do, and anybody who burns a flag really should find somewhere else to live. But from a legal standpoint, it's legal. Again, it's disgusting.
But it's funny, in classes I'd bring this case up, and I would say, if I had been on the court, Justice Feinman, I would have voted to not allow flag burning. I thought he was wrong on it. You know?
Yeah, this is kind of ironic, and sometimes people's political leanings show a surprise in an issue. And that's just what.
Yes, he is interesting, and Roberts is also surprising, the Chief Justice, and I see that our lovely, and I'm being sarcastic, Vice President Mike Pence condemns him for, you know, for being involved in a number of decisions. So, but I think Roberts has been outstanding. He doesn't care what people think. He's unpredictable, and so is Gorsuch. So the court is not as right wing as it could be, because those two, and even, by the way, even Kavanaugh on a couple of cases involving presidential authority with Trump actually voted against Trump. Even Kavanaugh did, which I was surprised
by. But I think, you know, you and I can both be pleasantly surprised by Gorsuch, and there have been other instances too. Where Gorsuch has followed the Constitution and what he thinks is right, even if it's not something that he thinks personally.
Yes, like gay and lesbian employment rights being protected.
Yeah, that was
enjoy that.
Again, it comes back to one of my favorite people, Geraldine Ferraro, where she, as a Catholic, said she was not pro-choice, but she understands it's the right thing to do and it is the law. So as a politician, she is pro-choice. But as a woman, she's not, which is very cool. And I just, you know how much I like her.
I'm pro-choice by policy, but I don't really like having abortions. I prefer people to have fewer abortions.
Right.
That's always what I said.
You and I agree with that. It's not a form of birth control. It's a very mean thing to do. But if you want to do it, that's your business. There shouldn't be a law against it. And Ferraro, she took the right approach. And, you know, in some ways, again, politics making strange bedfellows, as Ferraro, a Democrat, but not a particularly liberal Democrat. And Gorsuch, I don't think he's quite as conservative as we thought he was. And those two ways, they're both similar. And shows they're both very intelligent, which I like. So, you know, Gorsuch, I'm starting to warm up to the guy. Kavanaugh, he's a scumbag. I have no other way to say it.
But he did vote against Trump on the cases involving President about the lawsuit. So it was a 7-2 vote.
Yeah, but as a man, he's so objectionable.
And Kavanaugh, I couldn't believe it.
I don't mind calling him a scumbag because, again, as a man, that's kind of what he is. Although, I'm not saying he isn't intelligent and he isn't qualified on paper to be a Supreme Court justice, but, you know, as a man, again, take a look at Gorsuch. As a man, Gorsuch is great, and that's also a nice thing about him. Not unlike someone like Ben Sasse, we don't agree with him on a lot of issues, but as a man, he's great and very intelligent, college president. So there are examples of people where we may not agree with all their politics, but they know what the right thing to do is. And
yes, I don't know whether you noticed that I had written about 2024 election. Imagine that, getting involved in talking about 2024. And I had said, you know, the possibility of people who might run. And I have Ben Sasse as one of the 14 I list in that article. And I make the comment that only he, Larry Hogan, or Charlie Baker, both governors, would be the ones I could imagine, you know, living with. All the others I think are horrendous. But I mean, I do think Sasse has potential, yeah.
Yeah, no question.
And notice, not Nikki Haley. I was not nice toward Nikki Haley.
Yeah, I think he's intelligent enough, Ron, to not let a lot of his own viewpoints, such as being very anti-choice, kind of get in the way of his policies. I think Gorsuch could teach him a lesson, and he's smart enough to know the system. So, yeah, I would have no problem with him as president. I can live with the issues where we don't agree. I just know he's smart enough to make the right decision, so maybe something to look forward to. Who knows?
Ben Sasse, PhD in history like me.
On July 27th on your blog, you write, Nancy Pelosi's likely last term as Speaker of the House in 2021-2022. Now, she's about 97
years
old.
And
she's 97, I think, or however old she is.
She's 80, but she'll be 82 plus by the end of 2022. So I think she's probably going to retire. And assuming she'll be Speaker, I mean, I'm assuming that. There's no way to know. But, yeah, so there's a question of who might replace her. But
so you give a list of people who could be replacements for Nancy Pelosi. And I must say, Ron, I don't think I've heard of any of these people. Hakeem Jeffries of New York, Catherine Clark of Massachusetts, David, here's a good Italian name, Cicilline. Cicilline, that's a good Italian name, of Rhode Island, Sherry Bustis. That name would certainly garner a laugh or two.
I think
of Illinois. Cedric Richmond of Louisiana. And we have
what's interesting is Hakeem Jeffries and Cedric Richmond are African American, but Bustos and Clark are women, and David Cicilline is gay, a gay white male.
Well, we have a nice diverse.
So we can have a black
bunch.
Speaker, a woman speaker. Well, we already have had a woman speaker, but a black speaker or possibly a gay speaker. If assuming these are the people underneath the top three right now, we're all around 80. So these are the most likely ones that will be competing to be the top three positions. And I think Hakeem Jeffries, who I really like a lot, comes across very well from New York. I think has an edge on it at this point. You have to look him up. You'll see what I mean. He's really good.
So we'll definitely. Definitely see. He's in his late 40s currently. So a generation.
They're all in the 40s or 50s. They have to be younger. These people are 80 and over, the top three. You know, meaning, of course, obviously Pelosi and also the two underneath her, who obviously, actually they're older than her, you know. But it's amazing the need to have change coming. You know, I think it really is necessary. Stanley Hoyer and James Clyburn are actually older than her. It's really crazy in months. So it's really crazy.
the Congress were to remain where the House is, you know, Democratic, which is needed to be a Democratic speaker, yeah, with Hakeem Jeffries being around 50 when he would take, if he were to take office as Speaker, could you see him being Speaker for 20 or 30 years? Is that possible?
If the House stayed Democratic, I don't know if it'll... Actually, I want to point out that the House of Representatives' all-time record was straight Democratic majority from 55 to 95. 40 straight years. Unbelievable. And then, of course, the Republicans won in 94, and Newt Gingrich took over. And most of the time, with a few exceptions, the Republicans have controlled the House, not in 7, 8, 9, and 10, and not presently, but otherwise they generally have. But 40 years straight, the longest ever. And the Senate, they had 26 straight years of Democrats from 55 to 81, then lost it for 6 years, and then, you know, and then gained it back from 87 to 95. So, I mean, they really were dominant for two generations in both houses, Democrats.
So he could be Speaker for 20 years. Who knows?
Well, he could be. It's unlikely because nobody's ever been Speaker that long. Well, actually, let me see. The longest was Sam Rayburn. I don't think he was there for 20 years. Actually, maybe he was there about 20 years. I'd have to think about it. In three different rounds because he was pushed out twice by Republicans taking over. But he actually was Speaker for about 17 years, from 41 to 61, with two-year periods out. So it's about 16 or 17 years. And there's a building in D.C., the House building, the Rayburn building. He's considered the best Speaker, most significant Speaker of the House ever.
We're almost out of time. Time flies when you're having fun, as my mama always told me. You did mention about possible Republican presidential contenders in 2024. Of course, Nikki Haley, we talk about her a lot. She's on there. Mike Pence, of course. He'd be about 66, assuming office. That's decent age to become president. Marco Rubio, the short guy with big ears. Rick Scott. Ted Cruz, Rand Paul, aforementioned Ben Sasse, Tom Cotton, Josh Hawley, Ron DeSantis, your governor, Larry Hogan of Maryland, Charlie Baker of Massachusetts, and Mike Pompeo of Kansas, who's the Secretary of State. And last but not
least... Why did you mention Mike Pompeo? I don't mention him or Mike Pence. I realize I left them out. I don't think either of them will be a major factor by then. And last, of course,
Tucker.
Pence becomes president.
Tucker Carlson. So, an interesting,
can you imagine that?
Interesting, diverse bunch. Do notice the only one of the female persuasion is Nikki Haley. It's kind of surprised you, Ron, of all these people, 14, only one is a female?
Well, the Republican Party doesn't have many females in office. The Democrats have a lot of them. I think there's nobody that's that prominent in the Senate or House among women in the Republican Party at this point that I could think of. Unless Marsha Blackburn of Tennessee, who I think is obnoxious, but Marsha Blackburn is also, well, she's getting into the high 60s, so I don't know if she would even run. I guess she could run, but she's probably the only one I would even think might run. But there will be a Donnybrook. There's going to be a ton of people running. And actually, I hadn't thought about Mike Pence or Mike Pompeo, but in theory, yes, they both could, especially if Trump wins, then they could. But if he loses, I'm not sure if either one can go very far.
You don't think a prominent cabinet member like Betsy DeVos might be interested? Do you think she has aspirations of being president or vice president?
Betsy DeVos?
Yes.
I'm sorry. I think I have to go to the bathroom and vomit. That's what I would say about her. Okay. I don't think she has any ambitions.
Well, I know you don't like her, but do you think she might want to be president or vice president?
She's more despicable than almost anybody working under Trump, just about. She is absolutely horrible for public education. I think she's a total disaster and crooked as hell. And honestly, I think I might jokingly have to vomit after I get off this call.
Well, I was just asking, do you think she has presidential aspirations? I didn't ask if you liked her. I know you don't like her, but...
I don't think so. She's not very good at communication, honestly.
Okay,
and
she
doesn't show up too much. Just occasionally at congressional hearings, and she doesn't make a good impression, in my opinion.
That's why I ask. I just only noticed one person of the female persuasion out of 14... So you do mention,
of course, Elaine Chao, the wife of Mitch McConnell, who's quite a bit younger than him. You know, she's been a cabinet member twice, but I don't think. But she's also very. Both of them are involved in constant conflict of interest because you shouldn't have your wife in the president's cabinet when you're majority leader. That's inappropriate. But this is what happens under Donald Trump. All kinds of inappropriate things.
I would put on the first tier, Ron. I think you would agree. The people that are most likely in the first tier are Nikki Haley and Ben Sasse. On the second tier, Ron DeSantis, Rand Paul, I guess I'm not sure about Tucker Carlson.
He's horrible.
But I think Mike Pompeo maybe. But that's kind of what I'm thinking. But we'll find out. That is in 20.
It all depends on what happens this year. That's the whole thing. And then, of course, there's Rick Scott, who is really horrible, the governor and now senator, who's caused all the grief in Florida with the unemployment system. Nobody can get unemployment compensation because he set up a system to make most people be rejected. And, you know, even the governor DeSantis has said it was a poorly planned system. And Scott doesn't give a crap. He doesn't care.
We do thank Ron for joining us on a fine mid-morning coffee break with Adam and the professor. Of course, we discussed about a tenth that we wanted to discuss, but that's okay. We shall return very soon with more stimulating talk. More than likely, our next show will focus on the VP pick of Joe Biden, because I think by then he will have made the pick. Ron, you have a great rest of your day.
Because next Monday when we're on, it's going to be the first day of the DNC remotely. So he has to pick the person during this week. Has to.
Well, something tells me, Ron, our next show will be very stimulating and just a little bit controversial, but that's part of the fun of talk radio. Have a great rest of your day. Again, we invite you to send me an email on our private email server, adam@wwgh1071.com.